Julian, good to see you.
Yeah, you too, so, Brian.
You've got a guitar back there. Do you play?
I do. doesn't mean I'm very good, but I play. I started learning in 2010, I think it was. Or 2010, about that. But then I had a baby in 2012. Well, I didn't have the baby. My wife had the baby. And, yeah, then things sort of went downhill after that. I used to have this cool vision of like, oh, I'm going to sit there and play for the kids. It's going to be, you know, that traditional romanticized version of playing the guitar for your family and your kids. It lasted maybe, I think, a week or so when he started walking. So okay. Before that, it was fun. It was all fun and games. But then when he started walking, he walked right up and grabbed the strings and cut his fingers on the high E. And it wasn't funny at the time. I felt terrible, but then the guitar got put away never played it again. No, so it's something I've picked up recently over the past year or so, just to get back into it.
Okay, it's cool. So you've been playing for like over 10 years, but...
Over 10 years.
but I could probably catch up with you if I work hard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
yeah, I feel slightly bad that I'm a gray hair, bearded, long haired dude picking up guitar in his 50s. It's so cliche.
That's the perfect time to do it, I think.
I mean, I guess it's either that. It's that I have to do that because I can't afford to buy a red sports car. So.
Yes, exactly. Get a nice shiny red guitar instead. I have a nice Lego Fender that I'm in the middle of building.
Cool.
You could play that. You could try playing that.
I want to get the typewriter, the Lego typewriter. Mm. Cool.
I saw that. I saw it on the shelf, and we just got back from a trip to Canada, and I saw it there, and it looked pretty cool.
So tell me about Canada. Was that a vacation for you?
Mm. It was at first. I said this on our podcast for a little bit, but it was my first holiday vacation in 10 years since 2013. So, okay. Yeah, it was a long time, but yeah, it was the best. We had such a nice time. It was really fun.
So, which half of Canada did you go to?
So we went to the better half.
Vancouver.
I'll let people decide. No, we were on the Ontario side, so we're on it's closer to the Easter coast.
Yeah.
So
I've never been over there. I've just been over to like Vancouver and Victoria. But
yeah, see, I've only flown through Vancouver, and it looks beautiful from the airport. So. As you're flying in, you see the mountain peaks out the window. But no, we're in the other side. We went to Ottawa, and because my wife's family's from there, so we went to Ottawa. We went to Toronto, Niagara Falls. You know, went to a wedding out somewhere named Brantford, I think it was. Yeah, it was good. A lot of fun, lots of family time, and nice. A hectic schedule. Hectic schedule.
Well, hectic. It's supposed to be vacation.
I know. We as we were reflecting on the way back, we thought, oh, okay, next time let's plan less things. So we had something on the agenda every day to go see people, do things, nice. Hang out with friends. You know, it was wild.
So the first time my wife and I did an international thing, we was a work trip, but she was her and the kids were able to go. We went to stayed in Munich for 10 weeks. But I was working during the week, but it was kind of cool because we just had to figure out how to live life in Munich, shopping and cooking and stuff like that. But we had the weekends to go play around, and we really had a lot of fun just really getting to know stuff. So, a few years ago, my wife and I went to Paris, and we were out with a tour, like a group of people, but they kept, some half days, like we'd have something planned in the morning sometimes, but nothing in the afternoon or vice versa. And I loved that, like just the free time to be able to just poke around and hang out.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. I'm going to cut you off. That's my favorite kind of exploring. I really love that, being dumped in the middle of a city that you've never been to, and then what do we do? And just walking around. finding stuff.
Well, that was some of our favorite times of just like looking at a map and saying, we haven't seen this part of town. Let's just walk around there.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing.
And like Munich's small enough. One time I was there, I rented a bicycle, and you can like in a couple hours you can bike around the whole thing.
Wow,
as a circle. So maybe it was longer than that, but anyway, it's possible in a day, at least.
That's fun
to ride around the inner circle. But Julian Sequeira, how do you pronounce your last name?
So Sequeira for my friends, but for you, no, I'm kidding. So Sequeira for almost everyone that I talk to, but if you have any Spanish, Portuguese listeners or anyone watching this, it'd be Sequeira because it's a Portuguese surname.
Okay, Sequeira.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like it. Portuguese. So what Portuguese are you? Where's your family from then? That where this comes from? Is it from Portugal or
no? No. So it's a funny story, but look, it's not that long. But my parents, somewhere back along the line from my dad's side of the family, they came from Goa in India, and Goa was settled or invaded. I actually don't know the history. by the Portuguese at one point. So there's a big Portuguese history influence down there with a lot of people there have Portuguese surnames. And that's where ours came from. And then it's just traveled around the world.
Nice. Well, I've got a shorter story for Aachen. I was adopted and it's just my family's name. So
that's a great story though. Thanks, Ben. I'm glad you shared that with me.
So you're actively building up the Pie Bites empire with Bob Beldervoos, right?
Exactly.
Bob is full-time now. Are you full-time or are you?
No.
Okay.
No. So years ago, this is kind of funny, when the business started growing to a point where we were like, wow, we need to be on this full time. We didn't expect it because, I mean, most people may know by now that we didn't expect Pie Bites to become a business, right? It was a blog and that was it. And then as it grew and we realized, oh, people actually need us, want us to do stuff, we should go full time on this. we had to make a choice, which one of us goes full time and which one of us quits the day job and goes full time on Pie Bites. And while you would think that would lead to like arguments and fights and all that stuff, it was like a 2-second decision because that Bob goes on it full time because we had a baby on the way. Everything comes back to having a baby with me, I think. and my wife was pregnant and I went, yeah, dude, that's not happening. You go. Yeah, have fun with that. So yeah. And also, you know, relatively speaking, living in Spain, things are a bit cheaper than here in Sydney, so in Australia. So it was just a no-brainer. So he went full-time and it's been great. So as the business has grown, so has inflation and so has so has the general cost of living. So I'm not out yet but to work on the business full-time. But it's something that's going to happen shortly.
Oh, so, really? Okay.
Mm. I will say that we were at a point where I could have done it maybe 6 to 8 months ago. And then all the prices went up and my mortgage almost doubled. And I was like, maybe not yet, Bob. Let's just give me another year, man. Just hang tight. So
your mortgage yeah, doubled. Is that because you bought a new house?
No. Well, we bought a house last year, but over here in Australia, and this is kind of funny, I've had a few American or North American mates go like, what are you talking about? How can your interest payments go up on your mortgage? We pretty much only do variable interest rates on your on our houses. You can fix them, but you'll be hard pressed to find fixed rates that go for more than 1-2 at max, I reckon, 5 years. And I think you'd struggle to find 5 years. So when my mates told me in the States, oh, yeah, we fixed our mortgage at like 1.7% for like 30 years. I'm like, I hate you. I hate you so much.
Yes, I probably shouldn't ask you this, but I'm dying to know. How do you figure out how much money you all make if it's peaceful time and you're part-time?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So we without giving away too much of the inside scoop, it's pretty funny. And I'll share this story. When we started making over, you know, $500, I think, a month, like the business started bringing in. And as anyone who starts their own business will know, that's huge. You know, your first couple of dollars, your first $100, your first $500, you just think, wow, that's incredible. And Bob and I, we both decided, we said, hey, we're best mates here. Let's never let money get in the way of anything, right? Yeah. Or the success or anything that might come from this. And we never anticipated we'd even grow to the point that we have today, right? Where, you know, there's Bob and myself as the primary people, but we have a team of like 12 or 13 contractors working with us. So that's people amazing. Who build it. Yeah. And most of them are coaches for the program. But we have support staff and things like that, right? And we never thought we'd get to this point. But anyway, I digress. Back to that $500 thing, we both said, how are we going to make sure that we always keep this top of mind? And so we actually docu-signed a document together that said, if we ever stress or worry about money or it ever gets to a point where we're thinking adversely about cash or it's impacting our friendship, we come back to this doc and remember that we signed that our friendship comes first.
Okay. Nice.
Above anything else. And so we actually have never even had to do that. Money's never been an issue. Bob was the full-timer, right? So it makes complete sense that he draws a full-time salary from working on Pie Bites, right?
Yeah.
And me being just a few hours every day after hours, we just do it on a sliding scale like that. And it really doesn't bother either of us, you know?
Yeah. Hope you don't mind me asking about that. I was just curious.
No, not at all. I think we've spoken about it once before, about that document that we signed.
See,
we
thought it was kind of funny. I'm not surprised that you've gotten huge because you guys are both awesome. Community aspect has been front and center from the beginning of you trying to include and be, I guess, just cool with everybody that you're working with. But it does, it's a lot different from going from two people working together to your bosses now, right? People that work for you. That's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really weird. We talked about it a couple of months ago. We're like, whoa, man, we got a team. So, you know, we had, I remember the pride, I think, I don't know when it was a couple of months back. I got a screenshot of it. We had our very first all team meeting and almost the entire team made it. And just to see all those people brought together for the first time, meeting each other, because they're all across the world, right? We've got people in so many different countries. It was really nice bringing everyone together.
Was it a physical meetup or?
No. Over. Okay. We don't make. How much money do you think we make, buddy? Oh, jeez. No.
Over $500.
It was over $500 offsite. Yeah. Zoom. And it was, you know, the typical thing, but man, the energy, you know, Bob and I were both quite emotional, both like, I almost teared up. I was like, wow, seeing everyone here talking and sharing, just as the people realized they had similar interests to other people over the call as they were introducing themselves. And yeah, it's been nice, but I've got to admit the hardest thing is, remembering that we have such a widely dispersed and varied team and that we should continue engaging them, right? Just like you expect at the standard corporate workspace. Hey, why aren't we doing anything for the team? Where's my Friday afternoon drinks? You know, so we need to constantly figure out how we do that. So just recently we bought them all Pie Bite swag and stuff to,
that's great. So,
yeah, they all have shirts like this now, and actually, they got more stuff than me. So I'm like, "How does that look? I haven't got one of those. We didn't buy ourselves any swag."
We should totally do, Michael and I should totally do Python Bytes swag.
Yeah. Oh, you should. Yeah. It's so much.
I want a t-shirt.
It's so much fun.
I've wanted to make like testing code t-shirts for a long time because I've got a whole bunch of sayings already that I want to put on there. Like, I like to break things.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Anyway.
You should. I'll tell you what. I'll help you with it offline.
Okay. That'd be awesome.
Nice.
But the swag's important. We're noticing that even at my corporate job of people like their job. And it's good that they like it, and it's cool if they want to wear some like company swag, get it for them. Like, that's great, because then they're walking around and people go, "What's that? Oh, that's where I work. We're awesome, and we do all this cool stuff."
Yeah, and that's not to say that the swag is there to solve every problem, right? I mean, if people are interested, by all means, and that's actually what a lot of people were saying. Yeah, hey, we're coaching people. It'd be cool to have a Pie White shirt to coach people in. You know, so we're like, oh yeah, and that's what triggered the idea. But you know, we're hoping, yeah, if we think big, and Bob and I are constantly like visualizing 5 years into the future and thinking so gargantuan, it's in the realms of insanity for right now. But we would love to be able to like treat everyone to like, hey, let's all go and meet for a week in Berlin, right? Oh, or yeah. Choose one of the team and say, we're somewhere in your home country that we could meet. So at least I get out of their hometown or you know, somewhere in Europe or North America or something would be nice, you know. But actually, I would love to do something in like Japan, or that would be mad. But they're so expensive as well. But, you know.
You should come to Portland and then we could all like, you know, we could be there too. It'd be cool.
I wonder why you'd say that. I wonder...
You know, you could just get you send them a stack of Pie Bytes stickers, and they could advertise on any shirt they're wearing. Currently,
we'll get some sew on or iron on, iron on stickers.
because a Pie Bytes flannel would be great. in the Midwest, maybe Iowa or something. If you got anybody,
I would
in
love
Iowa.
To see that. I'd love to see it. Nice. Yeah. Anyway.
So, you guys have recently switched to coaching and done a lot of coaching, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I guess it's not really recent. It's been, a couple years?
Yeah, it's been, 2023? So, yeah, it's been 3 years. Roughly three and a half. Yeah.
So, did you start it before the pandemic then?
Right before. We started, I'm pretty sure... We sent the email saying, hey, how can we help you with the Python problems you're having? That's how we kicked off coaching. I think we sent that email like 2 weeks before lockdown kicked in worldwide. So I think we sent it in February 2020 and maybe January. We kicked it off right as COVID was starting. It was it was a great time to start a business.
Well, not a non brick and mortar business. I think you're right. I think it probably was a good time. People, especially virtual coaching sort of a thing.
Yeah.
So it
worked out well. I mean, people, it didn't, at that point in time, COVID wasn't so huge that people were, you know, burnt out from it and stuff. It was, you know, there was a lot of fear. A lot of the statistics were coming out and stuff. And I think, you know, this helped people. A lot of the people who came through the program at the time, for them, it was actually a nice, for lack of a better word, distraction. You know, they were focusing on something positive like their growth. And we were doing a lot of mindset calls. And actually, how the program worked back then is very different to how it worked now. So, you know, we were doing a lot more one-on-ones with people. Just myself and Bob, because we didn't have a team. I think it worked out well for a lot of people. It was helpful for their mindset. It was helpful for giving them something to focus on during a pretty difficult time, right?
Yeah, that's pretty great. I like it.
Yeah.
You and Bob are different personalities. Bob's pretty happy, but I have to say you're like even – a brighter spark than Bob, I think.
Take that, Bonobos. Take that. Thank you.
Or maybe just more open about it. I'm curious, is this, I mean, clearly you have hardships and stuff. Is it conscious that you try to present a positive persona, or are you just generally a pretty happy guy?
I think it's a bit of both. I definitely have the things that stress me out. And in the moment, actually, to be honest, most of it's to do with the kids, right? Because it's like the one part of my life that I want to have a little more control over, but you kind of have zero control when it comes to the kids. And I'm talking about things like bullying and so on, because my older two boys are in school, and there are things that, you know, that go on at school that you just never be able to control, who their friends are, how they react to situations. Like if someone says something mean to them, you know, you want to jump in and step in, right? But you can't. And, you know, that's illegal, I'm pretty sure. So so those things, they do tend to weigh on you. But, you know, I think as Bob and I always talk, so obviously I mentioned Bob a lot. That's because he's my best friend, right? And we talk every single day for at least an hour, right? And then there's at least 10 to 15 minutes of audio messages on WhatsApp that we're sending back and forth throughout the day. And we talk about it, that we essentially train on mindset a lot, stoicism and the 7 habits of highly effective people, all that sort of stuff, right? We've just talked about it so much through Pi Bytes. We've practiced it so much in what we do every day, because to run a business, as you know, Brian, you know, there are ups and downs. You've just launched a bunch of cool stuff, and, you know, it takes a lot of mindset to be able to push through those days when you're like, the last thing you want to do is sit here and write this damn book. But you just push through and do it. Other days you've got all the energy in the world, right? So with all that sort of, I'll use the word training that we've been doing for ourselves on these topics over the years, it just filters through to the everyday. So, yeah, look, I do have the things that go on, like, of course, the stresses, the mortgage increase. We just had a water pipe burst in one of our internal walls of the house, which is, yeah, but, you know, there's that essence of you just, and in the moment, I might get frustrated. I might be like, oh, come on, this is the last thing we needed. But at the end of the day, you just 5 minutes later, you're going to go, well, am I going to sit here and sulk about it, or am I going to focus on what I can control and let that be the thing that makes me happy, right? So getting on top of it, getting the plumber out to fix it and all that sort of stuff, I'm like, okay, you know. And in, I think, an hour from now, an assessor from the insurance company is coming out to have a look at it, and I'm just like, yeah, done. Don't need to worry about it, you know.
That's so great. So yeah. You clearly, I think, have a tendency towards looking at the bright side then. Mm-hmm. But it's not free. You actually still have to keep working at it.
Yeah, it's not easy, and there are the tough days, but I think a lot of people don't pay enough attention to themselves and how they work, and the triggers that set them off, the triggers that stress them out. You know, like meetings, for example, could be something that raise anxiety levels in people. And if you don't pay attention to what it is that sets you off and then what it is that recharges you, then you don't have that balance, because sometimes you're just going to have to do the things that raise your anxiety levels and stress you out and stuff. It's just part of life. But then how are you going to recharge after that? You know, are you taking that self-care that you need to get back to centering yourself? And not enough people do it. And that's, I think, a lot of people are stressed.
One of the things I'm trying to do, thanks for the therapy lesson right now.
send the bill.
So I'm listening to a book. I almost finished listening to a book called The Happiness Advantage by Sean Acor, I think. It was written in 2010. It's an excellent book, and it's not that long to listen to. But I'm really enjoying it. But one of the things that he talks about is the effect of just being, you know, being happy and nice to people on the rest of the people you work with. There's a whole bunch more, but that's the part we're focusing on right now, because there are some topics in meetings that do trigger me, and I can tend to end up being a little surly.
I can't even picture it.
So what I'm trying to do is make sure that that I don't end the meeting. It's kind of like one of those things of you like never as a married couple, you never end a day in a fight or something. Mm-hmm. I want to do that with meetings. I never want to end a meeting with somebody thinking that I'm upset with them. So I'm trying to be conscious of the mood of the meeting, and if it got dark in any way because of me. To try to lift that back up and make sure everybody knows that I appreciate them before I end the meeting, because I really don't want to be the kind of, that guy that brings everybody down for the rest. That's just a problem. So
I like that. That's a good one.
And I do think that I imagine that you already do that naturally.
The thing for me is I just don't have meetings. No, I'm kidding. I just don't go to them. No. I'm with you on that. Yeah.
So you, have you had pretty good luck with your coaches? Any bad people that you brought on and went, oh, this person's just kind of not a good coach?
No. All the coaches themselves have been incredible. And so I don't know if everyone knows this, but the Python coaching that we do, the coaches, I think all but one of them, And actually, aside from two of our new specialist coaches, but all of them have been through the program. They were all our clients at one point. So we coached them through building their Python applications, learning those software development skills and best practices and mindset and all that stuff that we do in the coaching. And then they got to the end and they said, we don't want to leave this environment. You know, the common sentiment across them all was that we want to stay involved. We love what you guys are doing. We'd love to help you grow. How can we help you with this? And when we got to a point of scaling and needing that sort of support, we were like, would you come on as a coach? And they're like, really? You know, and we brought them on, and it's funny, they, as with building your own team at what you'd call a traditional job, that as we built this team out, we realized just how different each one of them was, how different their styles were. And so it's allowed us to do things like pair them up with like-minded people or people who have similar interests, and that we know that if this client went with this coach, their experience is going to be 10 times better than if they went with another coach because of the demeanor and the tech stack that they want to use and things like that. So cool. So far, only because this is recorded, so far everyone's been fantastic. I hope they're listening to this, you know, talk about you. It's great. We actually don't have any issues with the team, knock on wood. We haven't had to have any awkward discussions like, hey, you're not it's not working out with you, buddy. I'm still trying to figure out how to say that to Bob.
You're gonna fire Bob.
Here's the thing, Bob.
Needs you to work harder.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that man works like 10-hour days. Jeez.
Going to need you to do 3 YouTube videos a day.
I think you did that once. But yeah.
You're like probably the only one of two people I know that live in Australia. Mm-hmm. Anthony Shaw as well, right?
Yeah, and he lives down the road. Or I live down the road from him, whichever way you want to put it.
So from the stuff he posts on social media and also just my understanding of Australia seems like it's just full of animals that are trying to kill you. Mm-hmm. You're just going to answer with, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, because if I say anything, they'll get me. They're waiting outside the door with a baseball bat or a cricket bat.
Okay.
No, it's true. It's 100% true. There's a look. It's not as scary, but when I think about it, it's constantly at the back of my head that there is some that you got to check. You know, you got to walk into a room and check. And you know, there are people here who just aren't fazed by it, like Anthony. Right? It doesn't faze him. He's not worried about spiders and stuff. But me, if I see a spider, I want to burn the house down. Right? I'm not a spider person, but I'm also I'm fine with snakes. So you know, if we see a snake in the backyard or something, I'll just, as long as it's staying where it should be staying, like in the bush or something, I'm like, yeah, whatever. But, you know.
Well, are there snakes that can hurt you? I mean,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, oh, yeah.
In the Northwest, there's rattlesnakes, but they're usually in the drier areas. So okay. We don't get rattlesnakes in the suburbs. Not in mine that I know of. And if you know different, don't tell me. I'm talking to everybody listening.
Yeah.
But like I lived in Colorado for 4 years before I learned that we had both tarantulas and scorpions that were just in my neighborhood. And I didn't like that.
Wow. I remember our old house before we moved up the coast here and bought this place, the neighborhood was relatively new. It was only like 10 years old or something. And it was built with a sort of national or regional park around it. Lots of bushland, very dry. We had kangaroos in the front yard every day during the summer. It was a nice place. And during those bushfires a couple of years ago, it was a scary place. But we would have, so there was a Facebook group for the local community. And every couple of days, especially in the summer, there was there's a red-bellied black snake on this street. Just make sure you stick on the other foot. We cross over to the other footpath. And those are super dangerous. And I'm like, really? And you'd go for a drive down the street, and there it is, just sitting there on the pavement, just warming up in the morning sun, you know. And you'd be like, okay, just going to stay in the car. Yeah. So I've had people with snakes crawling up into the wheel well of their car and then disappearing. And so they've had to leave their car at work. So a snake catcher could come out and remove it from their car.
They're
like, oh, we can come tomorrow. So he's had to taxi it home. So yeah, it happens.
So are kangaroos in the front yard a problem?
They were, because they would leave their droppings, to put a nice word, all over my front yard, and I hated it. I'm like, oh man. But it was kind of nice. Like you'd get out those days. I was, getting up early to go to work. And when I pop out the front door, you'd see them scatter like teenagers getting busted with graffiti. They just look up, and then three of them would just run off in different directions. You know,
when we were in Colorado, we'd have rabbits and wild rabbits in the front yard, which are pretty, but the, you know, rabbit droppings all over the place.
Yeah.
And then occasionally bear and deer in the backyard. And so we couldn't grow anything because they would just eat it. But also cleaning up after a bear is not.
Like as in its droppings?
You need a shovel for that. not nice. A good thing. Anyway.
This is a great topic, by the way.
Animal poop. Finally, an episode my daughter will listen to.
It's about time.
So one of the things that you mentioned was teaching Python to non-technical people, or at least teaching coding to non-technical people.
Yes.
Other than like your PyBytes thing, or is that what you're talking about?
It is through PyBytes, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So really, how do newbies come to Python Bytes or PyBytes?
Yeah. So it's something we kicked off sort of randomly, serendipitously, because we, with the coaching that we do, it's generally for people who already have a knowledge of the foundations of Python, right? We don't want to be teaching people at that point. We were like, okay, well, know the foundations, know how to write a function. It doesn't have to be perfect. Know, you know, how a for loop works and so on, right? But we kept getting people who knew very little to nothing wanting to be coached, right? And we didn't have anything for them, and we felt really bad that we kept sort of turning them away. And so we built another program, and that's the PyBytes Developer Initialization Program. So init, we started calling it PDI, PyBytes Developer Init, because of the, you know, init levels for servers and, you know, computers and stuff. But no one sort of got it, and we're like, okay, we've got to get rid of that joke or that reference. But anyway, so we take people who know zero, and they're traditionally from the non-tech roles. Like, you think about roles like recruiters and salespeople, marketing, EAs, you name it, right? They're generally roles that require using computers, but very little no programming, right? It's not part of their skill set for doing those jobs, even program managers, project managers, that sort of thing. And so we're taking people who don't even know what the command line is. They don't have any CLI on their computers other than the basic, say, CMD for Windows. And we're teaching them to code in 6 weeks. And so it's been a different experience, but oh man, has it been fulfilling. It's been so much fun seeing these people who just never thought that they could ever learn to code, that it was for the realm of the nerd, you know, people like me who live and breathe tech since they were kids, right? They thought it's not possible. And then within 6 weeks, they're coding in GitHub, they're using branches, they're making pull requests, going through code reviews, they're understanding Python as they read through their own application. They're talking about feature requests and just, you know, one of them talking about, oh, this is a decorator I've got on this this function here. And I'm like, wait, you're talking decorators now? Who are you? You know, and it's really fulfilling to see people proving to themselves through the coaching that they can actually code, and then taking it back to their day jobs, right? And making those changes. So,
well, I imagine it varies, but why are people doing this? Is it so they can communicate with other people that do program, or to actually because they want to write stuff themselves?
A lot of them, it was because they wanted to skill up. They wanted to stay relevant. They've paid attention. They're seeing that coding is becoming more and more prevalent. ChatGPT, you know, that the technical aspect of computing is starting to become more and more prevalent in their day-to-day. And they want that leg up, right? They want to make sure that with all the things happening in the job market, that they stay relevant. And so they're using it as a supplemental skill for their jobs, like to automate certain things they do. Some of them are looking to move into development or development adjacent roles, you know, like go into DevOps, go into any sort of systems engineering, any support roles where they might be able to use some of their technical skills, right? Mm. That's the motivation, honestly, so far has been people just wanting to prove to themselves that they can do it. And an unexpected benefit as well is it can also show people that they don't want to code without making them invest 5 years in a computer science degree. They go, they can come through the program, learn it, and go, yeah, you know what, this isn't for me, and then drop it and walk away, you know. So it's pretty cool. It's very satisfying, because it's one thing to coach people who already know how to code and this is something they've lived and breathed, they love tech, all that sort of stuff. But to coach people who don't believe that they can even do it and then show them they can, that's something different. You know, that's something special. So that to me is really nice.
Do you think there's a place left still for people that are going off and getting a 4 or 5 year CS degree?
What do you mean, a place for them?
Well, like, does anybody need to do that anymore, or should they just do 6 weeks and go from there?
We're gonna open that box. Hey, look, I see why people say that you need to, right? And there are very specialist positions, I think, out there that require that level of in-depth knowledge, right, of computer science and algorithms and all that sort of stuff. I disagree that everyone needs to do it to get into the industry. I'm very strong that I have a very strong opinion and belief that if you can do the work and work your butt off and network and code and build and just build your portfolio, build your presence, and just show that you are passionate, that you can learn, that you can grow, that you love this stuff, that you have just as much chance of getting these jobs as someone who's just spent 4 years, 5 years, whatever it is, getting a comp sci degree. In fact, I think we should be putting our money where our mouths are, right? Like, if you want a software job, there's lots of jobs out there, right? But with the amount of demand, the amount of people going for these roles, you kind of want to see that they can do what they can do and that they say that they can do. And I think a coding interview is the worst possible thing to be asking people to do. I think it's backwards. I think it's a disgusting practice. Oh, I'm going to go that far.
What do you mean by that? Like the whiteboard sort of a thing, or
the ones that put people through stress, right? If you're going to ask people to live code in front of you.
Oh yeah.
Okay. You know, I think that's really mean, you know, I think it's really mean. I think you're not going to get the best out of people, and that's how we code, you know.
Yeah.
We code with resources and with time. And so, okay, if you're going to ask people to do something at home, okay. If you're going to ask people to demonstrate their code by, hey, show us something you've built, and then let's talk about it. Like that, that's really special, I think, because then they can talk about their own project. They can talk about their motivations. They can talk about their code, and you'll see the excitement in their eyes as they relive that code base and talk about, oh, yeah, I remember I got stuck on this function because this is what got me, you know.
See, I think we're actually probably going to see a resurgence of coding interviews. I haven't tried to hire anybody since ChatGPT came around. So pre ChatGPT, one of the things I liked to do was to send people a code example or a problem, like just a toy problem or something, or through two or three, and say, here, write this, you know, come up with a coding solution for this. And then, also write tests for it. I'd like to see, mostly I'd like to see what test cases they think are important, for making sure something's working. And they're all pretty easy stuff, but I'd like to have something so we can talk about during an interview.
Yeah.
When we talk about it. But now if I did that, I would just assume somebody just throw it into ChatGPT and let them do it. And it would even write the test for them. And as long as they understood the answer, they could just turn that in. I don't know if that's useful or not.
You know, and that's the change, you know, Bob and I talk about a lot, is that, yeah, it's going to be in there being used by people for exactly those scenarios, right? But the thing that everyone needs to really get their head around is the code that ChatGPT spits out, is it safe? Is it accurate? Is it actually going to work? Is it going to break your system? So if you don't understand what it's spitting out, then there's no point even asking it, you know?
I think like, why would I have a problem with that actually? If I hired somebody that could like just figure out how to do everything quickly.
Exactly.
Why is that bad? I don't know.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And that's where I kind of see the evolution of this, is that you use it as your pair programmer, as your coding assistant. It's like, hey, you know what? I need a function that does this. Can you quickly write that in Python and accept these inputs? Right. And then it spits it out and you're like, all right, perfect. That's a great framework. I'm going to edit it now for my use case.
And right? I guess like part of it's a fairness thing of like, if I've got some. You know, if I'm spending 8 hours a day working on stuff and somebody else can get that much done in 2 hours because they're using an AI, is that fair? I don't know.
Maybe it comes back to the days of, do I use the internet or go through that 20 volume of Encyclopedia Britannica my shelf?
Well, yeah, also. Hey, one of the things I wanted to make sure let you know is, since I talked with Bob, one of the things I've done is launch the PyTest course. Some of the coaches on PyBytes have access to it, and I've gotten some good feedback from not just, hey, it's nice, but also some actual changes that needed to be made. So I appreciate the feedback from
That's awesome. No, I love that. Did you pay them for it? No, I'm kidding. Don't.
Well, yeah, I gave them free access to the course.
And by the way, congrats on the course. I saw that. I was like, man, this is awesome. Just putting out stuff. I mean, you only just launched the version 2 of the book. When? Last year, was it?
Yeah. Like, but you know, a year, it's been almost a year, and that's forever in internet time. But
tech terms. It's ancient.
But it's awesome. It's a thing that, like, the reason, one of the reasons why I wrote the second one is to try to have a nice ramp up for people. And I always knew I wanted to write a course to go with it. Mm. And so finally getting around to actually doing it, it's good to,
yeah.
It must feel good.
Yeah.
It's fun. And I imagine like somebody sitting right next to me. That's what I want the whole course to be. It's like we're just sitting next to each other and I'm telling them about stuff. It's less of a lecture format. So anyway.
Yeah. What was the biggest challenge with launching this course?
You know, stupid things how much editing should I do before? Stupid things like pricing, how much to price it for, what's too much, what's too little. But there's like real, I'm going through like, Michael Kennedy, like wrote his whole back end for his course. I'm not going to do that. So I'm going through like a third party course system. I'm using Teachable and, but then there's costs associated with that. And so I need to make sure that like the fees are such that, you know, that it works. And there's annoying things too about it. I mean, I love the platform, but there's always annoying things. Like,
yeah,
in order to hook in PayPal, I have to give up a couple more percent for even all the sales that are not PayPal. Like,
wow. Okay.
Weird things like that. It's like, that doesn't make sense, but
yeah,
whatever.
It's funny all the stuff you have to factor in that actually has nothing to do with the course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally get it.
And like, how big should the font be when you're recording?
You know? Oh, that bit me in the butt back in the day. I remember that. Yeah.
Well, I personally, so I learned this from Michael of doing large fonts. And so I'm doing so much recording now that I just leave the same large font on all the time. I've got a big monitor. It's fine.
Yeah.
Right. But it drives me nuts when I'm watching somebody else's tutorial. And I watch tutorials on my phone a lot. And I can't see a damn thing that like little tiny, I'm like, they're not even using all of that. It's all crammed up into the upper left-hand corner and they're talking about it. Why don't you zoom in on that
thing? Yeah. Mike taught us the same thing back in the day as well with the 100 days courses. He's like, it makes you increase your font, change your resolution of your monitor and all that stuff. I'm like, oh geez. Okay. All right.
Well, and I was kind of used to it anyway, because when I was writing the book, I needed to make sure that all of the code examples fit in a, reasonably short, I mean, small window and everything.
Mm.
But I don't know if I'm working on a new book too. So we'll see. Nice. But you know, that, that's probably like, I'll probably be where it's one of those, like I'm writing a book. And it'll be 10 years later before it's actually comes out. But
tell me it's a romance novel.
Romance novel. Oh, although, okay. I am like, so, 50, how old am I? 53 now. I think when I turn 60, all tech people have to start writing sci-fi novels.
Yes. Be the next Brian Herbert or Kevin J. Anderson or something, please.
But my goal is to have a couple more tech books and then write a sci-fi novel in my early 60s. Have them have them not sell very well. So then I have to start a cult. Maybe.
I like how much thought you've put into this. This is a great roadmap. I subscribe to the cult? Do I have to give anything?
You seem to already have one. You've got a business model that people pay you to interview for 6 months and then you offer them a job.
I didn't think about that way. It's a great recruitment model.
It's nice. I should try this.
Anyway. We're geniuses, Bob and I. Evil, evil geniuses. Yeah.
Well, I guess the last question I had, it was just circling back to kids. How old are your kids?
So I have three. I've got an 11-year-old, an 8-year-old, and an almost 3-year-old. Yeah, but they're awesome. We, you know, we're living the good life up here. The kids are happy. They're enjoying school, that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's good. And the almost 3-year-old rules the house. That was our daughter. We went for the third and thought, let's try for a girl. And we got lucky, got a girl, and now she owns us all. So I'm surprised she hasn't come hammering on the door yet, because she's probably awake, stomping around the house.
Well, I'll probably let you go. I've got two girls, and I love it. My youngest says, Dad, did you wish for a boy? I'm like, no, I did not wish for a boy. I wanted another girl. And she's like, oh, why? I said, because we had all these clothes, and I could save some money by recycling the clothes.
That's when you should have said, because we failed with you two. So we want to try again with it.
I love being a dad.
It's a lot of fun.
Are you going to teach your kids to code?
I've tried. So you know what? I look at you mentioned Anthony Shaw. I look at him and he's like teaching his kids to code. He's sitting at computers with them. You know, he puts the screenshots on Twitter and all that stuff. And I'm like, I hate you, man. My kids. Actually, I should message him. We went out for beers just before my trip to Canada, and I haven't seen him since I got back. But my kids won't even look at code. I think I've talked Python and stuff for so long that they hate the idea of coding. Like they're like, I'm like, do you boys want to learn how to code? I'll teach you. Do you want to try this? And they're like, no, thanks. And then I'll be like, you know, you play Roblox. It's not even Python. You can learn to code with Roblox and, you know, you can make your own maps and things like that. Yeah, okay, we'll give it a try. It lasted 2 days. No, thanks. So.
Well, yeah, they're still young.
Yeah.
You know.
I've given up on the boys now and I'm focusing everything on my daughter. So gotten her one of those kids coding books. It's like, here's what an algorithm is, you know. So
so she's three, so she'll never know a world without AI. So
that's true. Yeah, grew up during COVID, all the things that she'll grow up as in thinking this is just how it is, you know.
She'll have like a phone and she'll say like, Siri, make me a SaaS app.
Siri, get me a job.
Anyway.
Nice.
I loved catching up with you. We should talk more often. So Julian, thanks for coming on the show.
No worries. Thanks for having me, Brian. Thanks everyone for listening. And Brian, you take care. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to Python People. Let's keep in touch. Head over to pythontest.com/contact to reach out to me, or /newsletter so that I can reach you, or /support if you'd like to, you know, get a course or something.